Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You're listening to Side Hustle Pro, the podcast that teaches you to build and grow your side hustle from passion project to profitable business. And I'm your host, Nikayla Matthews-Akome. So let's get started.
Hey friends, hey, welcome back to the show. It's Nikayla here, back with another episode of Side Hustle Pro. And today in the guest chair, I have one of my favorite entrepreneurs who I am so inspired by. This is actually an update episode. Arsha Jones was on the show way back in 2016 in episode 26, one of my very early episodes. And I just love how she has built her businesses, grown her businesses, and just continues to do so many exciting things. So if you don't know, Arsha is a multifaceted entrepreneur with a unique ability to turn simple concepts into thriving million-dollar brands. Okay, multiple million-dollar brands. As CEO of Capital City, a specialty foods manufacturing company she co-founded with her late husband, Charles Jones, she personifies what it means to turn your passion into profit. With their signature product, Capital City Mumbo Sauce, they are credited as the first company to take this beloved condiment of the Washington, D.C. area and commercialize it for mass consumption. After moving out of D.C. into the suburbs of Maryland, Arsha often craved her favorite food, including chicken wings and mumbo sauce, especially when she was pregnant and she didn't like having to drive 30 minutes to get it. So she started making it on her own in her own kitchen, and then she was struck by the brilliant idea to create it for others, because she thought, well, what if other people have this craving and they moved out of DC and can't get it? Thus, Capital City was born. Arsha and Charles bootstrapped their new business by selling the sauce at local farmers markets and community-based events. Since its launch in 2011, they've grown Capital City from a mom-and-pop operation into a multi-million dollar brand, and their signature product, Capital City Mumbo Sauce, is sold in retailers such as Walmart, Target, Papa John's, and KFC, and even more you will hear in this episode. So in today's update episode, we discuss Arsha's strategic approach to growing multiple businesses. You'll want to stick around for this if you're someone with lots of ideas. We also get into how she was able to scale multi-million dollar businesses without being front facing. And we'll also talk about why there's no right way to be an entrepreneur or to market your business. And then finally, we'll talk about why Shaq, that's Shaquille O'Neal, is such a big fan of Capital City, and so much more. So let's get right into it. All right. All right. Arsha, welcome back. I am so honored to have you back here in the guest chair. And your episode was episode 26. Like, this is, I'm talking back in 2016. Can you believe that?
I know.
I'm sorry, guys. We're not going to recap every single detail. You're going to have to listen. I'll link to it. But we are going to catch up with Arsha and find out what she has been up to. Because at the time we spoke, you were still running Teasing the Trap and Capital City Mumbo Sauce. And now I want to just get an update in your words. You know, what are you up to now? What are you working on now?
Well, my goal, even when I started Teasing the Trap, was to transition away from that after about 4 or 5 years. And so now, you know, those 4 or 5 years have come and gone, and Capital City is our 100% sole focus. We still do sell some items from Teasing the Trap when people place orders, but we aren't actively kind of marketing it and pushing it like we used to. We are 100% Capital City, which was my goal from the beginning, and we've done a ton of things since then. It's been an exciting ride. I can't lie.
You know, going back, I've forgotten some of your story, right? So I was reminded that you have your BFA, right? You're traditionally trained. You're an artist. You then worked in web design. So how did you start going into this entrepreneur zone?
Honestly, I was in college and, you know, being on a track for a Bachelor's of Fine Arts, your lane was really painting and drawing, you know? And so as a 20-something in college, you know, 19, I really just wanted to make up more money, you know? And I saw painting and drawing a path to a struggle. And I'm not knocking anyone else for taking that path. I was just like, wow, I really love it, but I needed to figure out, okay, how can I transition this into a career that will bring me enough income in to kind of build the life that I wanted. And so from illustration, painting, and drawing, I transitioned into web design, which still gave me a creative outlet. And then from web design, I transitioned into building e-com site, branding for products, social media marketing, and everything kind of in that online business lane. And I found that I really had a passion for it. And that kind of fueled my desire to kind of create a business for myself.
So we've just gone through a series where I was giving people tips and I share my story of I started with a blog, the blog turned into the podcast. And you similarly, the very first thing you did in business was start a blog. What was your thought process when you were doing it?
Yeah. Honestly, it was an extension to me having web design consulting clients. I would always get information from people who maybe couldn't afford to hire me, that they still wanted the same information on how to kind of set up a blog, buy domains, and kind of get that all set up. So my blog was really based around how to build an online website, a blog, an e-com store, and how to market it online for people who were interested in self-help as opposed to, you know, like I said, paying for consulting fees. And that's kind of where my start came in, was blogging about web design. So, you know, I created a solid lane for myself.
You did. You know a lot too. And what I like is, you know, you didn't necessarily study that. Sometimes we think, oh, we have to study this. So those people, they study digital marketing. But no, you just kept on learning, figuring it out, testing immediately, and then learning some more.
Yeah.
From the blog, when did you go into the first business that you started and why?
Being a consultant and working for other people and having a blog, I realized that I didn't like the service industry as much as I Not knocking anyone who's in the service industry. It's completely fine. It just wasn't for me. And that's how it began. I was like, wow, you know, I really wanted to figure out how to create products that I could sell so that I could make money that was less dependent on me having to show up and give 100% of myself. You know, so I wanted a product where I could sell multiples of it over and over and over. Whereas when you're in a creative space and you in a service role, you constantly have to be on this hamster wheel of creating new ideas for each and every client that you encounter. And that's great, but I was getting burned out.
Understandable.
You know? And so
I'm still trying to figure this out, Arsha. This is why I'm having you back. I need a product.
You need a product. You definitely need a product. And I said to myself, I was like, I can't do this for another you know, 30 yeah. years or whatever, keep constantly showing up, and I will give my clients 100% of me, you know? And sometimes they would take my advice. Sometimes they wouldn't.
Let's be honest. Most times they wouldn't.
I know they wouldn't. They wouldn't. And it was frustrating yeah. because I knew I was right. You know, I knew I was right. And I knew I was the expert. Mm-hmm. And one day I was just like, you know what? I'm going to stop pouring myself into all of these other clients. And I'm going to see what it feels like for me to give myself my mm-hmm. own advice and use everything that I've learned for me and see just how far it takes me.
Hear you. Like sometimes I listen back to my episode, I'm like, wait, why am I not doing that? I'm giving advice and I've forgotten my own advice. So I completely hear yeah. that. And you know, we give so much to other people. It's like, all right, let's also make sure that we're taking our own advice. And I don't know what happens between when you give advice and the person's like, yeah, I need to do that. But there's something that's lost in translation sometimes with giving advice, and it can be really discouraging when you're doing that kind of work because you don't see people implementing what you're telling them, and you know you can help them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, it's a myriad of reasons why. It's own personal mm-hmm. hangups. Sometimes, you know, life gets yeah. in the way. So I get it. But I guess my belief in myself was so strong, mm-hmm. you know. It's one thing that I say, I'm not a gambling person, but the one person I will always bet on yep. is myself. And I said that I wanted to prove to myself that everything that I was teaching other people was right. And it was, because I am my most successful
yes.
client.
Yes. And it's okay for that to be the case. Because sometimes I feel like, is that okay? Yeah. Like, I am my most successful yeah. client, but it is okay.
It is okay. Because it's still proof. Yes. It's still proof that you knew something. Mm-hmm. And that if you put action behind the advice, yes. behind the yes. words, that you can get the results that you're looking yes. for.
Speaking of action behind the words, so some advice that we talked about in the last few episodes over January into February, mm-hmm. I talked about focusing on one thing at a time. And now I have you in the guest chair who is the exact opposite of that. But you are the rare person, the very rare person that I've spoken to that has done this well. So how did you manage launching different businesses at the same time?
Well, to a certain extent, the advice you're giving is correct. You know, you have to focus on one thing at a time. And then what I did was I would get one thing running really mm-hmm. well, and then I would add something on to it. I think why you see that not work for people is because they're adding on to tasks that don't have a solid mm-hmm. foundation. So they'll create this first business that doesn't have a solid foundation and isn't really that profitable. And then they'll start stacking more and more. And so by themselves, yeah. okay? And so now they have, you know, four or five different brands, and all of them are like running at 30% mm. of what their potential is. And so I think that's where people get it confused, is that number one, I started with one thing first and I built a team to help support yes. that one yes. thing. And then I moved on to the next thing. So I actually built Capital City first and had a team. So it could run completely with me only having to give it 10 to 20%. Okay. of my time. Okay. Then I built Tees in the Trap. And so that actually, because these were my creative ideas, it actually required more of my mental space than Capital City did. So I actually say I would give maybe 50% to Tees in the Trap for the creative aspect. But then once the creative was done, I had a team to help print the t-shirts and pack the orders and get things out and customer mm-hmm. service. So I think that people don't really come up with a plan of number mm-hmm. one, how to create their first sustainable business. Okay. And then how to build a team to help support and grow that business.
Yes.
You know, and you can't get this far as a team of one. It's impossible.
You are so right. There's so many people who are starting more businesses, and it's because there's a lot of noise out there. Like, you know, have more than one revenue stream. Make sure you have more than one.
And that advice is completely right. I think people just kind of interpret it the wrong way. So when I'm thinking about Capital City and I'm saying I need several different revenue streams, right? That, you know, I'll give you an example. My revenue streams would then center around Capital City. So that may be retail. That may be food service. That may be products and merchandise. That may be in-person markets. That may be my own e-commerce. That may be Amazon as a platform. All of those start with Capital City, but are different ways I make money, all leading into one funnel, which is Capital City. Like, I'm not like doing Capital City and then my other revenue is going to be real estate. And then my other revenue
is going to be real easy.
You know what I mean? And so people are picking things that don't relate to each other. And so now that you're kind of juggling these balls that don't even work well together, you know? So it's really just finding different revenue streams that kind of are branches from the main thing that you do.
Ooh, I love that. Let's unpack this for a little bit because this is very helpful. Sure. Because sometimes, we do feel like, oh my God, all my eggs are in one basket. All my eggs are in Side Hustle Pro, right? But what are the different revenue streams that, you know, roll up into Side Hustle Pro, whether that's ad revenue, whether that's courses, whether that's, you know, something else that I might want to do. And instead of trying to start new businesses, like, oh, now let me be, you know, this kind of thing. And not only does it, are they not working together, but they require now different skills and things that different parts of your brain. So you are just all the way stretched. Am I right there? That's the unpack.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Because then if you build a team, you need a separate team for all of these different industries. Whereas if you focus on one thing, that same team can actually support you across all those different revenue streams. And that's what you want to do. You want to maximize the people that you have helping you and figure out how they can help you make more money.
And you know what you're really good at? Making money, of course. But starting lean, you know how to start very lean and build a team. Yeah. So how did you do that? Because I know when you started Capital City, like you and your husband, your late husband were stretched for cash. You know, you went through a layoff, but yet you were still able to start these companies and hire a team. How did you do that?
So first, really, I always start by assessing my own weaknesses. And my weaknesses for me is anything that I really, I hate doing. And so I just make a list of all the things that I hate doing the most. And I start hiring and say, okay, how can I take this off my plate? And one of the biggest things that was like a drain for me or a drag for me was customer service. So that was like answering emails and dealing with customers directly. It was something that I dreaded doing every day. And so it didn't take much effort for me to find someone who could come in 2 hours a day, 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, you know, as a virtual assistant to come in and manage the customer service. I think some people hear hiring and they think, oh, I have to have this person full time. I have to have one that's in the States. I have to have one that's, you know, making X amount of dollars. And how am I going to afford those people? No, really need to just start with what you're able to afford. And if that means that you have to hire a $5 hour person overseas to help you manage customer service, then just start there, you know, because you never know kind of where that takes you, because that's exactly where I started. But now I have full time people who have benefits, who have leave and medical, and I have an office and I have cubicles and an entire staff, but I would not have been able to get here had I not started there.
I love that. Every time you say you have cubicles, I'm just like, oh my gosh, we have like, this is amazing. Right.
I try to refer to them as workstations because I try to get something that was that was kind of cute. Yeah, you know what I mean? Not like standard government basic workstations. They are nice looking. They are workstations.
I like that. I'm going to change my vocabulary to that too. So, did you use any business to fund the other?
Yeah, of course. The sole purpose for Tease and the Trap was to fund Capital City. I knew from the time that I launched Capital City that this business would be the business that would take me to the next level and be, you know, the catalyst for me growing wealth for my children. And I also knew that I wouldn't be able to go through traditional channels in order to secure funding and so I could grow. You know, I already knew the hurdles that I was going to encounter, like me walking into a bank saying, yeah, well, I have this really great wing sauce and I need a few $100,000 to fund it. They would look at me like, girl, what are you talking about? And so instead of kind of being down about that or wasting time kind of chasing traditional financing, I decided to kind of take some of the skills I've used building Capital City and create a cash business. And that was Tees in the Trap. Tees in the Trap was a business where I created products based on like pop culture, Black Girl Magic Lane. And once someone purchased the product, I immediately was paid for it. And that allowed me to kind of take all the cash that was created and dump it and funnel it directly into Capital City, because that's the biggest hurdle into getting people into retail and products into retail. It's not that people don't come up with really great ideas or people don't have really great recipes. Honestly, it's just the money. Yes. You need a lot of money to be able to keep up with the sales velocity of a retail customer.
I understand that Tees in the Trap made like $300,000 its first year. Was that a profit or a revenue?
That was revenue. That was revenue. It wasn't completely profit. And then I would say maybe about the second year, I would say about the third year, we were doing about $100,000 a month in sales. And I was just funneling that over to Capital City. And it helped me learn how to manage my finances. It helped me learn how to create budgets. It just really gave me a really grassroots start to, okay, how can I keep this cycle going, making money, but also investing money into the next opportunity, which was Capital
City. Yes, I love that. You know, I was talking to my friend the other day, and there's always this debate on social media, and you're the perfect person for this, because I think you exemplify this perfectly. Like, this is my dream to do, right? So there are stages to being a business. Sometimes you might have to be more front-facing. And so the debate is always, oh, don't start a front-facing business, yada, yada, yada. I personally feel that it's a means to an end sometimes. So if your front-facing business is a cash business, as you say, or just something that is helping you stockpile money for when you need to invest it into something that's going to take more capital, then do it. You can always stop once you don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. I have a few bits of advice that I tend to give for people, because there are a lot of introverts who want to start businesses, and they only see that path of having to be front facing. And the truth is, there is no right answer. Okay. My only suggestion is make sure you understand what the end looks like, because it does get tiring being the face of your business. If you want to sell your business, you know, if that's an option for you, you have to consider that you're now attached to it.
And people get mad about that.
People do. And I get it 100%. It's really personal preference. My preference was very specific. Mm-hmm. Okay. My preference was that I never wanted to be the face of my brand. And not because I have no desire to be front face. I don't need people to know who I am. But also I was thinking about what happens when I wanted to take a break, or I wanted to step away, or I wanted to hire a new CEO that ran the business on a daily, or if I wanted to sell it. I don't want my personal image attached to this business so much that you would know who was running it, you know, because the truth is there are many people that on a daily basis, I have an entire team that runs this business completely without me. And so I wanted to make sure that regardless of whether I wanted to show up publicly or not, that sales continue to come in, you know? And so my personal brand isn't a driver of this Capital City. And I strategically built it that way. But it's nothing wrong with people who choose the opposite. You know, it works. I'm thinking, let me think of some food brands that use their business owners' faces. I can't even think.
Maybe Pinky?
I know, right? I would say that. Pinky is a good example of that. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. I do enjoy her content and rooting for her to do well. I like to be an example of showing people that you don't have to go down that route. You don't have to have this really outgoing, big personality. You don't have to want to be on social media all the time. And you can still really be successful.
Yeah. And did you feel you had to be a little bit more forward facing when you were doing Tees in the Trap more?
Honestly, no. I rarely showed my face. And unless you knew that that was my business, you really didn't know who ran the business at all. And I preferred it that way because I didn't want to create, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I didn't really want to create an emotional attachment to that business, because I remember I knew going into it that I was going to close it after 5 years, you know? And so I think that that was a way for me to kind of stay detached from it and not make it about me, because once it became about me, it became personal. And I never wanted to take this stuff personal, because, you know, when you start to take stuff personal, you make decisions based on how things make you feel as opposed to making the right decisions for a business.
That's fair. That is so fair. Yeah. And that's I'm so impressed by your forward thinking of knowing, all right, this one's going to be around for about 4 to 5 years.
I had to do it. It was fun, but I had to put a cap on it because honestly, I thought about a few things when I started this business. I thought about e-commerce, the life cycle of e-commerce businesses, the life cycle of fashion businesses, the life cycle of Black-owned fashion businesses. And so I said to myself, I have about a good 8 to 10 years if I really like keep my kind of head down and push. But I have never seen a female Black-owned fashion clothing business last beyond that, you know?
And so I said to myself,
you know? And I'm talking about ones that are like
big,
big, you know? So I'm thinking about Baby Fat, and I'm thinking about, you know, male-centered Black brands like FUBU and all of those that are kind of, you know, culturally driven. And they just, you have to look up and see like when they started to kind of see their decrease and their relevancy fade. And I said to myself, I'm going to get out of here before that happens. I'm going to make as much money as I can and get out of here because see, Capital City had the capacity to be profitable beyond me, you know, like Capital City will last when I'm long gone.
It's like ketchup to me now. It's always in my fridge, by the way. I get it
from Wegmans. It's the car. But I appreciate that. Thank you. But that's exactly what it is. It's going to be one of those businesses where my kids still use the product. The product will still be on the show. And people will still say, I have never seen a Black-owned fashion brand last that long.
You're so right about that. So when you got the idea for actually commercializing Mumbo Sauce, did you have an aha moment in terms of like, did you get chills? Were you just like, this is it? Or was it like a gradual phase process?
I would say it was a gradual phase process because like, think about it. Like, I do not have the aesthetic of someone who wakes up one day and goes, yeah, you know, I want to create a wing sauce, you know? People ask me all the time, you know, especially when I have to do in-person events, they go, you know, are you a chef? Do you cook? And you come on our show and cook? And I go, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I am not any of those things. And so the thought process was behind it was that, number one, I really wanted a product that I could make one or two of and sell over and over and over and over again, you know? And how the story goes is that I was pregnant with my son, and I would have to have my husband drive me up to carryouts to get wings and mumbo sauce. And I just got tired of doing it, you know, because I was getting bigger and bigger, and it was just a hassle. So I learned how to make it in my home, not really thinking that I'd start a business from it. But I said to myself, wow, what if there are other people like me who have moved away from the DC area and could no longer get access to this product anymore? So it was very slow process and me figuring it out. But once I started to do more research, like I said, I had a background in web design. So that also included like SEO and Google search engine. I started to really dig into the Google search and finding out that people were looking for the search terms mumbo sauce. They were actively looking to purchase this product and they could not find it. And that's when the aha moment came up. I said, wow, if I create this product, I'll be creating a product that already has name recognition, that already had hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. There are 6 million people in the DC metropolitan area, and most of them know about mumbo sauce. So to walk into a business knowing that you do not have to do as much heavy lifting because the product is already known, it was a no-brainer for me. I said, all I have to do is get this product on the shelf, create a label that says mumbo sauce, and people will buy it. And that's what they did.
Simple as that.
If you're a small business owner, this is for you. Running a business is just plain hard. Endless to-do lists, employees to take care of, and your ever-present bottom line. So first of all, kudos to you for staying on top of it. And now I want to tell you about Gusto. Gusto builds an easier and more affordable way to manage payroll, benefits, and more. They help over 300,000 businesses by taking the pain out of tasks like automated payroll, tax filing, direct deposit, health insurance administration, 401k, onboarding tools, you name it. Gusto makes it easy. And they really care about the small business owners they work with. Their support team is attentive and helpful. And since money can be tight sometimes, you'll even get 3 months free. Just go to gusto.com/SHP and start setting up your business today. You'll see what I mean when I say easy. Again, that's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/SHP. I was talking to the creator of Partake Foods last year, and she talked about how hard it can be to scale a food service business from the lens of getting investors to come on board, right? Because the margins are lower for them and all this other stuff. What's your thought process around that?
She's absolutely right. The margins in food are very slim. Okay. So being a food business, you really focused on selling volume. You want to sell people products over and over again. I would say that, again, my thought process is a little different. One thing I learned about being a web designer and being a graphic designer is that, you know, it's perception. You know, I can make you believe whatever I want you to believe. And so that means that if I tell you that this is a premium product, then who are you to tell me it's not, you know? And if I tell you it's a premium product, then I can state whatever price I want to state on the bottle, you know, because now I'm telling you that it's worth whatever I'm telling you the cost is. So my margins has always been very, I'm not going to tell you exactly what they are, but they're extremely generous.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. So I don't operate in a place where, okay, I'm getting the bare minimum for my product. And also keep in mind that my product was the only product of its kind on the shelf, you know? And so I didn't really have anything to compare it to, as opposed to like Partake cookies when you're going on the cookie aisle. So then your retail buyers of these grocery stores, they can say, oh, well, these cookies are this amount of money. So why is your price, twice as much, you know? And so when you have a product that stands alone like mine, I can say, yes, my product is $6.99 and have no one to compare it to. So that was a really great benefit that I decided that I would adopt early on is perception, creating a specialty sauce. And number two, creating a lane that was specifically for me and I had no competitors. So I had no one to compare pricing to.
And how did you distribute at first before you were in the supermarkets and all the places you are now?
It's going to sound kind of crazy, but we started in 2011. Okay. And I actually didn't stop working at my job until 2018. Okay. And so much of our distribution was just me. I would literally go to work and then on my lunch hour, I would ride around and drop off cases of product to grocery stores in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan. I would have cases and cases in my trunk with like a dolly that I can like a cart with wheels on it that I could take. And I would run up to like Ben's Chili Bowl. I would run up to grocery stores. And that's how we would distribute, to be honest with you. It wasn't really anything that was all fancy or complicated. It was really trying to maximize. And I would have to be the one to do it because, you know, we were based in Maryland and my job was in Washington, D.C. And so I was already in the city. And so it was always my job to do that.
So were these clients, did you have to pitch them? And then they said, okay, we'll take, you know, this quantity each month or week.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what happened. I would scour around looking for mom and pop shops. And then mom and pop shops are usually, and they aren't necessarily one shop per se, but they are shops where they're smaller and local. So they could still be like a small local chain of like 5 to 10 stores, but they are stores where you can walk in and immediately speak to the purchasing person or the owner directly and say, hey, I have this product. I'd like to sell it to you. Here's some, give it a try. And that's really what we did. Sometimes I would give free bottles for them to set out and sell. Sometimes I would sell it to them automatically, but that's how we started at mom and pop shop until we were able to graduate beyond.
And how were you able to graduate beyond that?
I know, right? And so we had created a solid footprint in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area of our product. So we sold our product at like Ben's Chili Bowl, Eastern Market, and just like I said, mom and pop grocery stores around the PG County, D.C. and, you know, surrounding counties. And so what happened is our customers were tired of having to go to these very specific stores to buy this product. And so they would go into their retailers like Giant, Shoppers, and Safeway, and they'll say, why aren't you selling Capital City? I'm tired of having to drive to Easter Market to pick up this mumbo sauce. When are you guys going to carry this product? And that's really how we got started. Shoppers Food Warehouse. Yeah, Shoppers Food Warehouse reached out to us and say, hey, our customers keep asking for this product. How can we get it on our store shelves? That was how we came to be because, you know, honestly, it never even crossed my mind to approach retail. I was building this business as an e-com store. Remember, for people who had moved away from the area, because I assumed that, okay, people who are already here who are still going to the carryout, they'll just go to the carryout and their favorite carryout in their area and get the version of mumbo sauce that they enjoy. So it never even crossed my mind that I should try to get it into retail. And then you got to keep in mind that back then there was no easy path to retail. The path to retail was really dominated by the big players in that industry. So yes, the Heinz ketchup, Hunt's ketchup, the mayonnaise, the mustard, those were all brands that dominated the store shelves. And so they really didn't have a solid path for smaller people like me to be able to infiltrate that and carve out a little space for us. And so there was no blog, there was no website, there was no course, there was no boot camp for me to join.
How to get into retail, how to get into grocery stores.
Nope, not at all. So I just never even considered it.
And all my almost 400 episodes now, Sounds of Pro, I've never heard that. Even in your first episode, I don't think we discussed that. Like people actually asking, like, bring this product into the grocery store.
Yeah, that is amazing.
And so after that, did you start pitching or did it take you a while to say, hey, you know, Wegmans, take this in store?
After that, things kind of went really fast. We actually had signed an exclusivity deal with Shoppers. So like for the first year, they were the only store that could sell our product. And so through that partnership with Shoppers, we were able to then partner with a distribution company that helped us get into more stores. So they kind of pitched on our behalf, I would say.
How did you learn about them? Through the Shoppers people?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Shoppers connected me with their distribution company that they enjoyed working with. And they were a company, again, you know, most people's entry into retail is a little different. They go with these large distribution companies where you are a small fish in a big pond. Okay. And in this case, I partner with a distribution company that was locally owned, family owned, minority owned. So they really took a liking to me and what we have built. And they really kind of held my hand through the process to make sure I understood every last thing about the retail business. And for that, I am forever grateful.
Oh, I love that.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So So now let's talk a little bit about your major partnerships, things like Capital sure. One Arena, Papa John's. Before this recording, I was watching your video with Capital One Arena, the chef there. So I was chuckling when you were talking about cooking, because you sure enough were just watching him cook like, yep, that's how you can use it.
I sure was. I was like, wow, you're doing a great job.
So which one came about first? I feel like Capital One is newer, but you let me know. Papa John's?
So I would say that through that distributor that Shoppers connected me with, we were connected to Papa John's. Okay. And so when they were having a few issues in media and their own crisis, they were looking, especially the local Papa John's, which is about 100, almost 200 stores in the DC metropolitan area. They were looking to kind of create some new buzz and interest around products and things to get people back into the store. And they had a connection with my distributor and they would say, hey, you know, what about Capital City Mumbo Sauce? They make this really great sauce. It's locally owned and a kind of a EC fan favorite. And that's how that partnership began. And then honestly, through that partnership with Papa John's, I began to make connections within different areas and industries. And I connected with a team to help me get into stadiums. So we actually have partnerships with Capital One Arena, the Washington Nationals, Baltimore Orioles, CFG Bank Arena, the Washington Commanders. So yeah, that has been a really great way to kind of expand our customer base and give us some visibility beyond just the store shelf.
Speaking of visibility, do you still feel the pressure to say, oh, this fair is happening, this concert is happening, we need to have a booth there or pay for this there, stuff like that?
No, actually. But you know, I don't want to be front facing either. And so it's really not hard for me to say, no, I'm not coming. And then plus we've created such a solid foundation for ourselves that we fortunately don't have to go to every event just like we used to. And so now we just try to maybe align our brand with opportunities that make sense, you know? And that's kind of what it is. It's not that I don't dislike all the events. It's just more so whether it makes sense and whether I have time in my calendar, you know, managing, being a business owner and still like a mom, I just try to make sure that I, you know, have the appropriate amount of bandwidth to take on these events. Cause they're a lot of work, you know, doing those in person. We also sometimes partner with other people and just, help sponsor their events. But, you know, our name and our products and things are prominently featured in those activations.
Okay. And back to partnerships for a second. I understand that Shaquille O'Neal was very, very happy when he found out that you guys were behind Capital City Mumbo Sauce. Can you share that story?
Sure. He also met him through the Papa John's partnership. And we just happened to meet him. Papa John's had a huge conference for all of their franchisee owners in like Tennessee somewhere at the Grand Ole Opry, I think. And so we had went because technically we were a supplier of Papa John's, you know, and it was for the suppliers and leadership and franchisee owners. And you have to understand that we were also a minority there, you know. We were a minority there, but we were just glad to be there, you know. And so when Shaq came into this meeting room to meet with all the suppliers, we were even more so a minority because Papa John's does have minority ownership. But we were at a special meeting for the supplier side. And we were the only Black people in there. And so, you know, Shaq can see completely over the crowd.
He can
scan the room from the bird's eye view. And he saw me and my husband standing there and he made a beeline to us. He made a beeline to us and was like, finally. My people, how y'all doing? And so that's how our relationship with Shaq came to be. He was just really excited to see us. After that, he invited us out a few times and he called me when my husband passed away. And so it's been a great relationship with him. We still have some things that we're going to do together in the future. But that's really how it came to be. It's just in these spaces, food, you know, you just don't see a lot of us there, unfortunately. And so it's a small club that we belong to. So even you mentioning Partake Foods, like I am not directly connected to her, but all of us know who each of us are.
Yes, yes.
Because in the Black minority owned businesses, of Black businesses in the food industry who have visibility at like major retailers like Walmart, Target. It's very few of us, you know? And so we know each other. Even if we don't know each other personally, we know our brands. We know each other's brands.
That makes sense. And, you know, every time I see a commercial with Shaq and Papa John's, I think of you guys.
He was really great and welcoming. And he has a really, it just, whatever you receive from him on TV and through media, he's exactly like that.
I love it.
Warm, welcoming, fun, big. But kind and just really a great person, great guy, great personality.
And something else you mentioned, another video of yours I was watching was about how you utilized Amazon's marketing tools to grow the business even more. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Like which tools and how did you utilize them?
Sure. I'll give you a rundown just for people who are interested in selling on Amazon. I know selling on Amazon can be very daunting because it's overwhelming, but I also know that people often will complain about the amount of money it costs to operate on Amazon because Amazon does cut into your profits a lot, you know? But Amazon is another volume game. Your goal isn't to make a lot of money per item. You want to make money based on volume, you know? So you want to sell as much product as possible. But once you become a seller on Amazon, they give you access to a section of Amazon called Seller Central. And so Seller Central has all of the data you need to understand your customers, what you're selling, how often you're selling, any patterns, locations. So like for us, example, I can look into Seller Central and our top locations for sales are California and New York, you know, those are our top two states for sales. And so usually what I do is I take that information, I organize that information and take it to my retailers. And when I'm trying to pitch new stores and bring people on board, that helps give buyers a larger picture because sometimes they'll see Capital City and they'll say, okay, well, this is a really great local Washington, D.C. staple. And I have to say, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a that is our foundation. That is what our core audience comes from. But our customers are all across the United States. And having those statistics from Amazon just further supports what I'm telling you.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because sometimes it can feel like, oh, I have to stay really, really local. I have to stay. I started this. I talk about my hometown all the time. I got to just focus on the hometown, but it's okay to scale. And other people, do you like sweet tangy sauce? I know I do. Do you like that on your wings? I think you might like that whether you live in California or DC. So
absolutely. I would 100% agree. I will say that I'm creating a brand that is local, gives you some benefits, and it's a great starting point because there are many local programs that helps get local products onto the store shelf. I know specifically I'm thinking about Giant Food here in the Washington, D.C. area. They have one entire rack of just all locally owned products. So it's an easy path to get onto the shelf, but I always consider that path a starting point. Create your foundation in your backyard because that's the area that you know like the back of your hand, you know? So I know, born and raised here in Washington, D.C., and living in PG County, Maryland, I know this area like the back of my hand. So I know the stores. I know what's relevant. I know the radio stations. I just have this core understanding of how this area works. I wouldn't have that same core understanding and knowledge if I was as a D.C. Washingtonian, then trying to say, okay, let's now try to pivot and sell in New York. It's completely out of my wheelhouse. I do not know how to navigate in New York. And so I would be lost trying to figure out a path to retail in New York because it's just not what I'm used to because their grocery stores are different. They don't have as many grocery stores because New York is such a tight-knit city. They don't have these large grocery stores. They have bodegas, you know? So then you ask yourself, okay, so how do I get on a bodega shelf? You know? And so that's a challenge that I would have to overcome because I don't know how those processes work in that area. Making sure that you double down on your own local area really provides you with a solid foundation because you have people supporting you, but it also, it actually brings you in a lot of money. You think about that there are over 6 million people in DC metropolitan area. That's a lot of people to touch and a lot of money that can be made. And we're still just in one metropolitan area. I think sometimes people overlook that thinking, oh, I got to go national. Oh, I got to go big. But you can be a millionaire and sell millions of dollars if you focus on a specific metropolitan area.
I love that reminder. It goes to show that there are stories that we tell ourselves that we have to stop telling ourselves. So that's the reason I brought up the, you know, having a front-facing brand, or you bringing up the metropolitan area. The stories that you might tell yourself is, oh, that's the wrong way to do business. So then you don't do anything. And that's what we don't want you to do.
I agree 100%. I think that people are always looking for reasons to talk themselves out of doing things. When the truth is, there are so many different ways to do things. Me and my salesperson, we just went to a huge food show in Las Vegas last week, and we walked around and we didn't have a booth. And I was considering whether at the next event I would have a booth. And we walked around and we decided that it wasn't for us, you know? So Truff was there, Mike's Hot Honey, all of the major players. And I walked around and I said, yeah, I'm going to go around this. This is a path for some people, but it's not the right path for us, you know? And I was 100% confident in my decision, you know? And so that just goes to show you that just because other people are going about it one way, it doesn't mean that you can't create a path for yourself, because especially being, you know, a Black woman in this business, I have to think outside the box. I can't walk through the same doors that other people walk through. And sometimes if I have a side door, sometimes I have a connected that offers me help. But those are the ways that I've kind of done business. And it's, you know, it's not the standard way people operate, but it's worked well for me, you know, because I've been afforded some really amazing partnerships that brands like mine don't typically get. And it's because I've always thought outside the box.
I love that. I was looking down because I literally just posted yesterday on my Instagram. I posted, don't do something you don't want to do just because you see everyone else doing it. And that's a reminder to y'all, you know? And a reminder to myself, because just the other day I was working on my vision board, and it's a digital one. I was just putting together my thoughts in different areas of my life. And then I found myself adding something to my business vision board. And then funny enough, this quote posted, you know, I have my post scheduled in a posting app. And it was kind of like God was like, give me a side eye, because I just like, let me go ahead and take this off. I know I don't want to do this. Yeah. But it just felt like everyone else in my industry, that's like a natural progression that they then do. And it's just not something for me.
Honestly, and that's the best way to go about it, because I find that when you start being motivated by what other people are doing, or being motivated simply by money, it's like, I don't know, it doesn't create enough passion and a longevity for me, because I'll give up as soon as it starts not being fun anymore, or I'm not making any money anymore. But there were times when Capital City didn't make any money. I'm sure just like your podcast, you know, there were times when it didn't make money, but you were still so passionate about it, that passion and your connection with your followers or your listeners that you got kind of fueled you to keep going. And so if it's something that I know I'll give up on, I don't even start, because I'm just playing myself at that point.
Yeah, we know it. Speaking of finances, let's touch on that right before we get into the lightning round. A lot of people lose money in the first few years of their business. What was your experience with Capital City, and how are you funding it today?
You know, we were definitely bootstrapped. Like I said, I started in 2011 and I actually didn't stop working until 2018. So I was collecting a check for 7 years.
Nice.
7 years. And so, and towards the end, that check really, it was just for me to cover like medical insurance for my kids and things. But the truth is, I wouldn't say we ever lost money, but there were many times that we broke even. And so with that breaking even, it was also some times where I had to pay my staff with my paycheck that I was getting from my job, you know, because of the velocity of kind of how sales were coming in. And so, no, it definitely was a challenge. It's always been kind of figuring out an equal balance between keeping the lights on and keeping product on the store shelf, but also kind of making sure that we pay ourselves and have more money coming in. And so right now we're still self-funded. I've been really lucky to been able to do it this far. We're going into our 13th year and we're still just getting started. And so, yes, you know, of course, getting investment dollars and things are always on the table and the option for us. And it's something that we are discussing. I've been very blessed to be in a position where I haven't needed it. And so that allows me to have a little bit more discernment on who I align my brand with. And so whoever you see me align myself with, it's because they were the right person and not because I was, I really was desperate for the money.
So even though Teasing the Trap was helping to fund Capital City, it sounds like it wasn't covering it all the way, or like, how did those months come out?
If we started in 2011, Teasing the Traps started in 2014. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there were at least a couple years in there, but where we were struggling to kind of keep things going. And yes, once I added Teasing the Trap into the mix and it started making money immediately, it definitely lightened the burden, you know, in terms of me having to have money to run Capital City, but also for me running my life, you know, like I use that money to live, you know, paying a mortgage and getting the kids, you know, things that they needed. So yeah, it definitely lightened the burden. And I would say from 2014 and then 2017 is when we first got into Shoppers Food Warehouse here. And that was our first major retailer. And then it's kind of been on since then. It's been on since
and
then.
And what do you think when you hear the word scale and when you hear the word legacy as it relates to your business?
Well, scaling for me first means doubling down in the Washington, D.C. area. There are still some people that I can talk to in this area and have no idea what Capital City Mambo Sauce is. And that's a problem for me. Yeah. Okay. because I believe everybody should know what we sell and what this sauce is and how important it is to the community. So if there is anybody in this area that doesn't know about it, it means that I haven't quite done my job just yet. Okay. So scaling for me means first making sure I 100% have exhausted all of the sales channels in the Washington, D.C. area so that no one can say, I don't know what mumbo sauce is. All right. And so then for me, scaling next would be then making a national footprint. And of course, we do sell nationally now. We're in Target and Walmart, not in every store, but in major doors across the United States. But just expanding on that, you know, expanding on that means more partnerships. Since Papa John's, we've had a partnership with KFC. Mm-hmm. We just wrapped up a partnership that gave us visibility with McDonald's. That was last year. And so that was exciting. And they have mumbo sauce at their 13,000 restaurants across the United States. And so it's really just making sure that we are aligning ourselves with companies who share our vision and want to grow our visibility and make us a household name. So that's what scaling means.
What is legacy? Mean?
So gosh, legacy for me, it means a few things. It's kind of what people will say about me when I'm no longer here anymore. And I don't want to be too morbid about it, but that is what is important to me. You know, I want, like I said, my kids to have a picture of me in their house, you know, and point to it when they walk by and say, if it wasn't for her, you know, because I want something that, like I said, leaves behind a feeling of pride for my family. I want my kids to be able to say, wow, our family was a part of something special and a part of something that will live forever. And when I think about legacy, I think about products like Old Bay seasoning and the legacy they have. And even though that the original family doesn't own the recipe anymore and they sold it to McCormick, that is a product that will live on for generations. But what cannot be taken away from it is the story of how it started by that one family, the one, I forget his name, but it's a gentleman in Maryland years ago who created this, you know, and his story is still being told till today. And that's what I want for myself.
And it's interesting that you didn't mention anything to do with like the financial piece, even though I know that's a part of it, right? Like that's
for me, that's automatic. Right. That's going to come, you know. That's going to come with it. Of course, I would love for it to be a thing where my kids were participating in this, even if for a short while. They're still kind of young and figuring out their own lives. But I really didn't build this business for them, to be honest with you. I built it for the community, Washington, D.C. And so if my sons choose to be a part of it or not, it's completely fine. I'm indifferent about it. I love to work with my kids. But the truth is, I did this as a love letter to Washingtonians. Right. I wanted them to have something that they can hold on to and be proud of. The same way New Yorkers are proud of their Junior's cheesecakes and their New York bagels and their New York slice of pizzas. And Philly has their famous cheesesteak, two cheesesteak restaurants. You know, every community has their thing, their food item that they are 100% proud of. And I wanted this to be for Washington, D.C. That's what I consider my legacy.
And now we're going to jump into the lightning round real quick.
Sure.
Number one, what is a resource that is really helping you in your business these days?
I'll be honest with you, it's Twitter, you know? I tend to find all the experts in retail and consumer packaged goods, CPG brands on Twitter, and I follow them all, and they tell exactly what they're doing, you know? And I just sit and I read what they're saying and how they're navigating this space. And it's so inspiring because even though none of them are necessarily sauce brands, maybe except for Truff, they're in the beverage space, they're in the natural food aisle, but I can relate to them so much more. And they often share apps that they're using. They share people, they share consultants, they share all kinds of services that they use to help run their businesses. And that's been really helpful.
Yes, you need to start a Twitter list like back in the day when people used to have a Twitter list.
Yeah, I know, right?
All right. Number two. Yeah. Now, who is a Black woman entrepreneur who you admire and would want to switch places with for a day and why? Non-celebrity.
Gosh, I can't remember her name. I think it's like Ella Grand or something. I think. Is that her name? But she's the Black owned partner for Skims.
She's on my rate. I need to reach out
American,
to her.
Yes. If I, gosh, I adore her. She's just so sharp. I really didn't have an opinion of her because I wasn't sure what to think of her. But then I saw her on a couple of episodes of Shark Tank. And I was like, boy, that girl is sharp.
She knows what she's doing.
And so if it had to be one, it would be her. She knows retail products and she is killing it over there. She is so very inspiring. And so that will be my top one.
And number three, what's a non-negotiable part of your day these days?
It's in between like just meditation and kind of working out things that I have to do to kind of center myself and make sure that I'm making time for myself among the craziness. And it's in between one of those. And meditation, sometimes it's something in the morning. Sometimes it's a sleep meditation that I'll turn on before I go to sleep. If all else fails, I know I can at least do that because I just got to lay in the bed for that one. And, but that is kind of just freeing my mind, I think. Things that allow me to free my mind is something that I have to do every single day. I consider it a hard reset for myself so I can refocus and making sure that I am setting priorities and getting my work done. Because I still, even as a CEO, I still have plenty of things to do.
Number four, what is a personal trait that you feel has helped you be successful in business?
I know, right? I think it's kind of, I consider myself a little all over the place. I'm a creative by nature. And so I constantly have ideas. And I think that those ideas have helped me. And being that kind of person who thinks of ideas regularly, it's helped me in the businesses that I have because I can really think very quick on my feet, especially when it comes to resolving issues and being creative about getting them fixed. And also coming up with ideas about how to move forward, which allows me to kind of think outside the box. Because I'm not fully invested, I consider ourselves outsiders in the food industry. We don't really operate like most food industry businesses. And I try to double down and lean into that because it allows me to think outside the box. So allowing myself to tap into my own creativity, think outside the box and kind of do what other retail brands aren't doing has allowed me to kind of honestly excel in this space.
Nice. And then finally, what is your parting advice for fellow women entrepreneurs who want to be their own boss, but are worried about losing a steady paycheck?
Regardless of what you see online, regardless of who you follow in entrepreneurs, just understand that your journey through entrepreneurship doesn't have to look like anything else that's out there. If you want to keep your job because you like your coworkers and it's easy and you get paid well and the benefits are good, you can still be an entrepreneur with a job. Okay. One doesn't take away from the other. It doesn't have to look like what it looks like on social media. You don't have to have the curated photos. these things that you see other people doing that you think you might need. You don't have to do any of that. You can create a path that works along with your current lifestyle and aligns with your future goals, because everybody's future goal isn't to be big. When I started Capital City, my goal was like, if I could have an extra $500 a month, you know, to pay some bills and kind of take my kids out every now and then, I would be fine. You know, for some people, that's enough. Yeah. You know, people are struggling today. So having a goal of saying, you know what, if I'm making an extra $3,000 a month, you know, that will change a lot of people's lives to make that amount of money. You know, set goals that are reasonable for you and don't allow anything that you see on social media to force you down a road that you're not comfortable with. Your path, your journey through entrepreneurship doesn't have to look like anything that's out there. Create a path all your own and be comfortable and happy in the path that you've created.
That's a word right there. Spoke right to my heart. You know, this year I have found myself, even as someone who is a content creator myself, I've had to really quiet the social media noise in terms of how I follow people. I'm not, you know, unfollowing a bunch of people, but social media allows you to really control who you see in your feed, right? And I found that sometimes the noise was allowing other people's voice to be louder than my own. And so I really had to turn down the volume to make sure I'm raising the volume on my own thoughts, my own desires for what I want my path to look like.
Absolutely. Because even just scrolling, you know, even just scrolling down Instagram, and if you think you're not even paying attention, you subconsciously start to kind of feel the pressures that come with it. And you have this fear of missing out because you're not doing what other people are doing. But like, you got to quiet that stuff, just like you said. And that means that you have to take a break from it. I've taken a break from social media to make sure that I am refocusing and have my priorities straight. You can't hesitate to do that, because the truth is there are tons, thousands, millions of businesses that are not on social media and they're doing just fine at all. Don't forget that, you know, you can be completely self-sufficient and wealthy and not have made not one post on Instagram. And so just understand that those options are available to you if you want them. You know, I know people who are successful in the government sector and technology, and they don't post about that stuff at all. You just need to find a path and an industry and a business that aligns with the life that you want to have for yourself. And if you don't want to be front facing, if you don't want to be online, there are businesses you can start that will support that.
I love that. I'll say this last thing. I always joke, and again, you're my Shiro here. I'm like, when I'm making my multi-millions, y'all not going to see me. If you want to know y'all if I'm doing well, you're not going to see me. That's how you know.
You're not going to see me. My phone going to be off. I'm going to be on a beach somewhere in the sun. You ain't going to find me.
You ain't going to find me. All right?
Just know I'm good.
And with that, I mean, I don't know if I can ask if people can connect with you after this episode. Find her on Twitter, I don't know. But where can people connect with Capital City after this episode?
Yeah, honestly, the thing about it is I'm very quiet online, but I'm always online.
That's what I noticed.
So if people tweet me or if you DM me or you tweet me or you want a response, I will always respond. I just don't actually post and things, but I will always respond to people that reach out.
What are your handles and also the website, you know, to remind people where they can get all the things?
Sure. I'm still at Arsha Jones, and that's at Arsha Jones on all platforms. So that's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. But I'll, like I said, I'll post, so don't look for nothing there. And then the brand, of course, is Capital City. That's www.capitalcity.com, and that's CAPITAL city.com.
All right, guys. And there you have it. I will talk to you next week. Hey guys, thanks for listening to Side Hustle Pro. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other side hustlers just like you to find the show. And if you want to hear more from me, you can follow me on Instagram at Side Hustle Pro. Plus, sign up for my 6-bullet Saturday newsletter at sidehustlepro.co/newsletter. When you sign up, you'll receive weekly nuggets from me, including what I'm up to, personal lessons, and my business tip of the week. Again, that's sidehustlepro.co/newsletter to sign up. Talk to you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.